Emma and Tom Talk Teaching, a podcast about all things education, presented by Emma O'Duher and Tom Breeze. Episode 21, Curriculum for Wales Q&A.
Welcome back to Emma and Tom Talk Teaching. We've got another episode that features a panel discussion that took place a little bit earlier in this academic year, around about March time. And this is a panel that was convened to present to a cohort of PGC secondary student teachers. It's important that we make that point because the three panel experts were sort of coming at it from a secondary angle. That's not to say that anyone out there who is a primary practitioner won't have anything to learn from this or find interesting, but it's worth us letting you know that it did have that audience and purpose.
Yes, we have this annual panel discussion on our programme. I was left all alone to do this one by myself because you were away.
I was.
So you'll hear a lot of me and not a whole lot of Emma in this one. Let's have a listen to find out what was discussed and then we'll come back and give you our takeaways. Welcome to this session. We have a Curriculum for Wales-based panel discussion every year in which we drag in some distinguished speakers and get them to give you some goodies for your future career. So I'll be introducing the panel in a moment. Just to let you know what we've asked the panel to talk about today, we've asked them to give you some goodies from their different angles on the question of when you actually go into the profession next year, very, very soon now, what are your most pressing considerations as new classroom teachers entering the landscape as it is now? What are the challenges for you? And what should you be looking for in your schools and beyond your schools to kind of address those challenges? Panel today, in order of appearance, in a moment, we've got Matt Morn, who's deputy head at Bayslake School in Newport. Some of you might know Matt if you're on placement or doing your SLT days in his school. We've got Dr. Gareth Evans, who is director of education policy at Rathrover, which is the ITE partnership just down the road, Trinity St. David Carmarthen. Prior to being director of education policy there, he was an education journalist for many years. So he's taken a big interest in the sort of policy landscape in the Welsh education scene. He writes a blog, Welsh Education Matters. Yes, Welsh Education Matters, which is always a good value read. So Gareth will be talking from that point of view. And we have Lucy Crehan, who is the best-selling author of Cleverlands. Some of you might have seen that book out there, in which Lucy travelled the world, sleeping on people's sofas and things, trying to find out the secrets of the highest performing education systems in the world and what we can learn from them. And having come back from those travels, Lucy is now a consultant, a curriculum expert. She's done work here in Wales on curriculum and also internationally. So we've got some interesting points of view from those three today. They have got 5 minutes each to talk to you from their particular angle. And it doesn't take a mathematical genius to work out that that means that there's quite a chunk of the session left for questions and answers from you. So you need to get your very intelligent questions ready. We've got a very experienced and interesting panel here. So this is your opportunity to ask those questions. We have got our microphone on a very long wire, and it is a very long wire for those of you sitting at the back. And I think Dr. Viv is going to be managing the mic on a very long wire. So your questions will be making it on as well. So without further ado, I'm going to hand over to Matt, who is going to start with his 5 minutes on what the most pressing considerations are for you and where you can look to address those. Matt.
Yeah. Hi, everyone. So I'm going to talk to you about something which is something I noticed in secondary schools, which will affect you, I think, going into the profession as it drips down into the classroom. And for me, a really significant consideration for you is something that secondary schools are still navigating, and it's the potential tension that exists between the four purposes of the Curriculum for Wales as the aim of a curriculum and as the driving force for education on one hand, and then the drive for qualification outcomes on the other hand. And I don't think that's a tension which exists within curriculum guidance necessarily, or within Qualifications Wales reformed qualification suite, or really in the levels that sit above schools. But I do think it's a tension which is being wrestled with at school level and with potentially negative results. I think at secondary schools, curriculum planning, particularly in years 10 and 11, can still be driven by qualification specifications, which I do understand. And I understand that qualifications are being aligned with curriculum purposes. But I also worry that assessment strategies within schools are being driven by a school-level focus on accountability towards exam specifications, which I think can be quite dangerous. Because assessment, for me, is a key determining factor in what classrooms feel like and the atmosphere in a classroom. And I worry that by having a policy within a school that focuses exclusively on assessment within specifications in that way, you create quite a narrow understanding of assessment and a narrower understanding of assessment than is needed in the profession. If school assessment models are designed in a way where teachers provide assessment information that is limited to progress towards exam specifications, there is a danger that assessment becomes periodic. There's a danger that assessment becomes a series of one-off activities separate to pedagogy. And there's a danger that it becomes narrow and limited in its scope. I think there's also a danger that staff can see assessment and tracking as the same thing, which they aren't. And that, combined with a model where assessment activities take place once every X amount of lessons in order to measure progress, can have a really negative effect on teaching and learning. Because if as classroom teachers, you are asked to provide certain types of information about the progress of learners, then you're going to design and plan lessons which generate that type of information. And that can encourage a view of progression which only focuses on things that are very easily testable, which doesn't consider progress in areas which are harder to grasp, like the resilience of learners, for example. I think people need to go into a profession with a clear understanding that for learners to make progress in the way anticipated by the Curriculum for Wales, assessment needs to be looked at as a much wider concept rather than as a series of independent activities. It needs to be seen as an ongoing and continuous part of teaching, where teachers are planning, they're responding, they're tweaking based on a constant and continuous drip feed of information which is gathered from a wide range of sources. All assessment methods need to be seen as equally valid as a means of gathering information about progress and learners. And the audience for assessment has to be the learners. I think for that to happen, teachers need to work in schools where they are expected to have a full and detailed understanding of the strengths and areas for development of all of their learners, both in their academic progress, but also in wider learning capacities. And it has to be gathered from a full range of assessment strategies. And they need to be able to plan for the progress of their learners based on that understanding and their professional judgment. Teachers need to work within systems that are open enough to allow them to make judgments based on a full and wide range of assessment information. And they need to work in departments which support them by helping them refine their judgments through professional learning and quality assurance systems, rather than channeling their understanding of progress into what could be seen as quite a narrow lens of formal strategies with quantifiable results. And that's not an easy thing to do. Secondary schools are very big. They need to have a handle on learner progress and will very lightly track at certain data points. We do that. We track learner progress because we need to make sure that we have our resources in the right places and we're supporting where we need to. What we track is a RAG rating, which tells us whether or not each learner is making the right amount of progress, not enough progress, or more than expected progress. What we definitely don't do is we don't determine what evidence teachers use to make those decisions. The expectation is that they know their learners in terms of their academic profile, but also in terms of wider capacities through an ongoing assessment, and they make judgments and a professional judgment based on a wide suite of assessment material. If I ask a teacher I work with to talk to me about the progress a pupil is making or isn't making, I would expect them to give me a full answer that indicates they know that learner and they can give me a wide variety of information over a series of different learning experiences. What I would not expect from them is a test result. My advice to people going into the profession would be to remember that the evidence you're asked to show for the progress of your classes, that isn't assessment. What that is that's tracking. And if possible, I would urge you to try and resist describing the progress of learners by a single data point or a single grade. In scenarios where you are asked to report progress or attainment in that way, I would urge you not to make that decision based off a one-off assessment activity, but to remember all of the ongoing and continuous assessment strategies that you use that are at your fingertips every day as part of every lesson, and to always consider progress of learners based on that wider description of them.
Thanks, Matt. So that's a very valuable perspective from someone who is there at the sharp end as a school leader. We're going to hand over to Gareth now, who is looking at it from perhaps a slightly different perspective. Let's see what Gareth's got to say.
Prananda, good afternoon, everybody. My name is Gareth, as Tom has said, and I'd like to begin by setting out a brief disclosure that I'm not a teacher, never have been. You are the experts in the room. I'm not here to tell you how to teach, because you know what you're doing far better than I do. But what I can do, hopefully, is tell you a little bit about my 10, 15 years working with hundreds of teachers across the country. I'm going to look at this from a slightly different perspective, from a very much a classroom perspective, and what you can, I think, bring to the profession as you join it, and what you can bring to your own school communities as you join them. I think it's important to remember that we are, aren't we, working in a system of change, new curriculum, new accountability arrangements, new professional learning, and changes to the school year even. The school calendar. But I think it's important to remember that most of, you know, maybe the curriculum aside, most of that stuff you cannot affect. That is policy level stuff decided at a national level by government and policy makers. You going into the profession need to be focused on the day job, need to be focused on those kids in front of you, the learners in front of you. That should be your focus, not the other noise that's going on in the system, park all that. What you are focused on is how you behave, how you act, and how you think in the classroom. And that, I think, would be my overriding message to you as new starters. And remember that teaching, as I'm sure Tom and colleagues have told you so many times before, is a privilege, a great privilege, but also a huge responsibility. You know, we've all, haven't we, got a responsibility, as have I in my role, to try and do our best by the education system, the best by the kids, the students in front of us. So yeah, by all means, and there will be times, you know, when you grumble, you moan, things are difficult, there are challenges, stuff going on in the background that we can't completely remove ourselves from, but when the lights are on, the cameras are rolling, you know, just remember that you want to be that difference. You want to be that transformational teacher that child in front of you remembers. That's it, really. That's the key message from me. Two other quick points before I finish. And the one is based on curriculum, as I'm sure we'll discuss a bit more about, and we've been encouraged to talk about. If there's one thing I take away from the curriculum reform over the last 5, 6, 7, 8 years, it's this idea of coherence. And coherence, I think, stems from knowing what happens between those years of 3 and 16, making sure there's a clear line of sight from the very earliest stages of education right through to the end of compulsory education and beyond, knowing what happened before you and what happens after you. So making sure that you're always in conversation with your colleagues, obviously, your learners, obviously, but also clusters of schools, the family of schools that you work with most immediately. It's really important for all of us to get ahead in this curriculum game, to have an idea of what other people are doing. Curriculum isn't developed in one school alone. You know, curriculum is being developed across groups and clusters of schools. And the other thing I thought worth mentioning that Tom likes is the idea of new student teachers going into the profession for the very first time being what Graham Donaldson talks about as being shock troops. This idea that you go in behind enemy lines, you're parachuted in, and you sort of infiltrate and you make things happen because you are new into that space. I think it's really important to remember that in doing that, you're coming from a position of real strength. You're not coming from a position of weakness, as might be expected from new and inexperienced teachers. I think the opposite is true. You've had opportunity to get to grips with the curriculum, to learn about it, to read about it, far more than many of your more experienced school-based colleagues will have done. So think of yourselves as being really important players in the whole transformation agenda. You're coming at this from a position of real strength, not one of weakness. And I'll pass over at that point to my colleague, Lucy.
Thank you, Gareth. So, nearly time for the shock troops to parachute in and ask us some questions. But first, I know Lucy wants to talk to us about, well, first of all, partly her specialism of curriculum, but also that all-important professional learning.
Thank you, Tom. Start with
with the professional learning piece, and there's been two, there are many, but two big reforms that are happening at the moment within the Welsh system that will affect your lives at school. One of which is the curriculum, but one of which also is a review of the roles within the system in terms of who's offering or leading on professional development within the system. And it's been a little bit patchy or inconsistent across the country anyway. With great change comes perhaps more instability. And certainly in the first couple of years of you being in schools, you cannot expect the system to provide you with the professional development that you need at the time that you need it. So my point here is not to deride the system, but rather to see this as a positive thing in terms of your agency as teachers, take control of your own learning. It's much more exciting that way anyway. Identify what it is that you think you need to get better at. Make sure that you are continuing to read, continuing to talk to other teachers, ask questions. Get on Twitter, I would say, because lots of really high quality discussions and resources and things being shared on Twitter, and access to some great thinkers on there. There are fantastic podcasts about, but make sure that you are not just waiting for, you don't think that it will happen. You need to really take control of that and move your own professional development forward over the next, I mean, ultimately, obviously your whole careers, but over the next 2 to 5 years in particular. Albeit, I recognise when you first get in, the last thing you're going to be thinking about is reading some more education books. You'll be just getting on with the job. But as you kind of come out of the kind of a haze of the first couple of terms of being a new teacher, do remember to kind of plug in to what the conversations going on both within Wales and the UK, and to be honest, internationally as well. Trust no one. From a professional development perspective, keep your criticality. The thing about education, which is sometimes frustrating, but also in a way quite exciting, is that there's not one answer. There's certainly not agreement on the best way to teach, the best way to design a curriculum. There's plenty of debate. There's also, it's a bit of a wild west out there in terms of the people who will come and offer professional development. And there are some fantastic providers, there are some people who I would say are not offering necessarily research-informed advice. So just make sure that you don't be sitting there thinking, oh, well, I'm quite new to teaching, so I need to just listen and write down and do what this person says. I am very aware that this probably includes me right now. But remember to be asking questions, is asking them, you know, what's the research base for this? Or is this research informed? Or how do you know that that is the case? Or what does that mean in my context? And I'm not, if you're confused about something and something doesn't seem to make sense, don't assume that that is you and your misunderstanding. It might be because either they haven't explained it well, or because actually what they're saying is not necessarily particularly good advice. So do ask questions. I know, obviously, you would always do so politely and professionally. Moving on to curriculum, which is the other major reform that is happening in Wales at the moment. I'm going to zoom straight in on one specific element of curriculum for Wales, which I think potentially be a challenge that I think you should all be aware of. And that is the role of knowledge and disciplinary specific progression within Curriculum for Wales. So the curriculum recognises the close relationship between knowledge and skills. It recognises the importance of knowledge, skills and experiences. It recognises the importance in the guidance of disciplines, and that children should deepen their understanding of key ideas and concepts within each discipline. That's in the guidance, but it doesn't actually specify any particular disciplinary concepts in some subjects at all. So you won't find, you won't find how those concepts are supposed to be progressive within something like music, for example. That is very much up to you to decide what concepts and what ideas and what skills should be taught when. And so there's a bit of a vacuum there in terms of an absence of information, knowledge about how do children make progress within each specific discipline. What that then means for you is that you might find that you're lucky in the sense that you're in a school where they've thought all of this through and they have a very carefully designed curriculum, which is carefully sequenced knowledge and skills that you're teaching. Brilliant. And you will learn a lot from them. You might not be that lucky. You might be in a situation where because of an equally valid focus potentially on the cross-curricular, sometimes that disciplinary progression can be lost. And then I would say it is your role as the shock troops. It's your role to be, again, politely and professionally asking those questions. So, you know, this is in this interdisciplinary project that we're doing, Can I just ask, like, how are we building on what students have learned before, and how does what they're now learning within this history, within this project, set them up for or relate to what they're going to be doing in year 10 next year? So just make sure that you are bringing that focus back to, are children actually making progress within the disciplines as well? Because that is the piece that I think is missing. I think that is all I wanted to say, but excited for the discussion. I'm looking forward to hearing your questions. Thanks, everyone.
Okay, thank you to all three of the panel. Now, we find ourselves with an opportunity, folks. We have in front of us a curriculum expert who can talk to us about the highest performing education systems in the country. We've got a school leader who can tell you what he's looking for from the people who are about to join his school and probably other schools. And we've got somebody who's spent his career critiquing education policy, both from the journalism and academia point of view. We've also got our very own shock troop, Dr. Viv John, who's got the mic on the end of a very long wire. Has anybody got any questions for our panel? Excellent. Let me get Dr. Viv to... Yeah. Otherwise, we will not hear your amazing question on the recording. Here she comes, parachuting behind enemy lines.
Cold, you'll have to excuse me. I was just going to say, considering the PISA scores that have come out from Scotland upon their introduction of their new kind of Donaldson curriculum over the past 15 years, and there's a decreasing in terms of results in that trend, what do you think the reform in curriculum for Wales is going to see Wales's scores, considering how poorly they're already performing? And this is to all three of you, if you fancy answering.
Who fancies that one?
I'll start if you like. Yeah, the first point I'd make on PISA and its relation to curriculum, particularly in Scotland, is that Scotland's decline in PISA predated the curriculum for excellence. So you can't necessarily equate one with the other. But what I would say is it hasn't arrested its decline. It hasn't helped, has it? Which does ask, I think, genuine and serious questions of what we're doing, given that we're following very closely what Scotland did. I'm often told that Wales is learning the lessons from Scotland, which is kind of reassuring, isn't it? And it's nice and fluffy, and we all think, oh, great, we're not going to wander down the same path. But I see us making a number of the same mistakes. We haven't necessarily ironed out qualifications. We haven't, I don't think, supported our profession well enough. And there are mixed messages right across the curriculum, both in terms of the progression framework, its relationship with accountability, and as we were talking about earlier, the language of learning and the fact that in one school, what somebody might think is good practice could be something very different to what another school thinks is good practice. I was talking only to a school recently about assessment for learning, and their interpretation of AFER-L was very different to what I would have considered it to be and what other schools would consider it to be. So do I have a short answer to your question? No, it's a problem. But we are 10, probably 15 years behind them. So I still like to think that we will, in time, iron things out. We're in the process of ironing things out, I think. We will have, won't we, in the next day or two, a new education minister. And I would like to think the new minister will come in with a fresh pair of eyes, have another look at the curriculum and look at the gaps, because there are gaps, and see what we can do to fill them.
Tom knows I'm going to have an answer to this one as well. I share your concern. It's not only Scotland that although I completely agree with Gareth, the decline started before the introduction of Curriculum for Excellence. It then continued. So it's not just that it arrested, it's not only that it didn't arrest the decline, but also those results continued to go down. And it's not even just Scotland, it's the same in New Zealand. So New Zealand had a similar curriculum and similar in the sense of it lacking that discipline-specific knowledge. It was not clear in either New Zealand or in Scotland, it is not clear, what the important learning that all learners need is. And the same is true of the Welsh curriculum. New Zealand are now reversing, refreshing their curriculum with a focus on what actually is the important learning that all learners need. Australia did a similar thing. Australia had a similar fairly high level approach.
realised that that was a problem, and then decided to bring in more clarity. Scotland are now reconsidering their curriculum. 3 or 4 years ago, they brought in some benchmarks, which was an attempt to bring in a little bit more clarity around what actually we're supposed to teach here. But for various reasons I won't go into, that it was, I think, executed poorly and became all about assessment. They were introduced as an assessment tool rather than what fundamentally do we want to teach, what do we want students to know. So I agree. I think it's a problem. I think what the new minister should do is to, in line with everything else that's in the curriculum, because I agree with everything that is in there, but what is also needed is some guidance, at the very least, around what disciplinary progression should or could look like in each of the subjects, and what, therefore, broadly speaking, for example, we should expect a student at the end of primary school to understand and be able to do in terms of music, in terms of science, in terms of history, rather than these very high level descriptions of learning that we currently have, which, let's face it, can be interpreted in 100 different ways, potentially, as happened in New Zealand, leading to inequities across the country.
So my view on this is that the PISA tests are really interesting. I think they're really valuable in a lot of ways, because we've been asked about this earlier, and they're really valuable because they are applied over a wide range of different countries, which means they have to be totally non-specific. They're not related to any particular curriculum. So they are testing, in its purest sense, if you like, they are testing pupils' abilities to apply skills, which is really valuable, because actually that's what the Curriculum for Wales really wants to get to the heart of. And if the Curriculum for Wales is successful and produces the kind of learners that we hope it does, then the idea is that they would potentially be able to show that by doing well at PISA tests. That would be something that they would be able to do. Something which is sort of always worthy of consideration, though, is that the Curriculum for Wales is a curriculum framework which is interpreted by different schools in different ways. And I think certainly until that is evened out a little bit, PISA tests could possibly reflect that. You have to remember that PISA tests are only sat by a very small percentage of schools at any particular one time. So it isn't every school in Wales that does it. It's a selection of schools in Wales that do it. And those schools will be at very, very different points now on their curriculum journey compared to where they were before. In our old curriculum, they will have very different experiences. I would also just really, really urge, and this, I know this isn't the audience to do this, but when we talk about tracking learners and measuring progress at school now, we really urge for everyone not to really focus on just one result, but to look at the result in a context, in a wider context. And a PISA result is a snapshot of what pupils, how well they could apply those skills on that particular day. And it needs to be looked at always, I think, within the wider context of how successful an education system is, not potentially the defining factor for it.
Thank you very much. Right, let's have our next question. There we go. A short walk for Dr. Viv.
Do you think there might be a gap between the priorities of some head teachers and senior leadership teams, and then what's seen as like good practice across the rest of Europe, like ties, blazers are a big priority of some leadership teams, and like fill in senior leadership teams with just lots of people, 20 plus, 30 plus people?
What was the second part of that? Sorry?
I missed the end of that as well. Do you mind repeating yourself?
Yeah. So just that if there's a gap between the priorities of senior leadership teams and head teachers, a gap between that and what's seen as best practice across Europe. So like the UK is the only, well, I think one of two countries in the world maybe with uniform, and there's a big push for blazers, or they're becoming more popular, blazers, ties, things like that, and big senior leadership teams.
So I'm probably in quite a good position to answer that one. As a senior leader in a school, I would say, I mean, I couldn't say with sort of confidence what the priorities of senior leaders are in European schools, but I can say with confidence that the priorities of senior leaders in my school and in most school in Wales are well-being and the well-being of young people and outcomes for young people and life choices for young people. So I think suggesting that priorities are anything other than that is slightly naive, because that is the priority of secondary schools in Wales, and that is manifested in different ways that are context-led by particular schools. But I would say it's across Wales, uniform expectation of senior leadership teams is the well-being of learners and their life choices and their, you know, their life chances.
I think we need to move away from ideas and notions of best practice, personally. And I don't think we can compare anymore within Wales, never mind necessarily across Europe and further afield. We know that every school is different. Context is really important. My recommendation would be, I think, to all of you, sort of allied to that, would be to get to know your school really well. Get to know what is expected from the leadership team. Get to know what is in the SDP. Get to know what, I was talking earlier about language of learning, get to know interpretations of the curriculum, interpretations of progression and various things within your school context. Because the curriculum, don't forget, is a curriculum framework that is locally delivered and locally adapted and locally interpreted. So every school, by definition, is going to be slightly different. There's going to be a slight variation on a theme. So I think for you, it's a really interesting question, but I think that's maybe for the policy wonks. It's not one for you, I don't think, to be caught up in too much. If I was a teacher going into the system now, I'd be much more interested in what's happening in my school, in my cluster, with my colleagues, than maybe being concerned about what happens across the piece and across, you know. I've been fortunate enough to go to a number of countries around the world, and they do things very, very differently. But the one constant is teaching, quality of teaching, quality of relationship between teacher and learner. That's one thing that you can all affect, one thing that you can all drive forward, and yeah, go for it, would be my advice. Slightly, yeah.
I feel like I ought to say something about this because it is about other countries. I think uniform, like these guys said, different schools will make different decisions on that based on their context. And sometimes they do that for the well-being of the learners, because if you have an area where clothes are going to cause a problem because some kids are going to come in wearing expensive fancy trainers and some kids can't afford that, then actually it's a leveller and it's something that might support the well-being of a school. So I think it's neither here nor there, but it is a contextual decision. I thought I was going to have to disagree with you, Gareth, but in terms of what we can learn from other countries, because I do think there are things we can learn from other countries, and then that is how you ended, because it's fascinating visiting different systems, because in one respect, especially looking at high-performing education systems, so all which have done well in PISA, which, you know, acknowledging that it measures just a few important things, not everything, you can have two contexts, Japan and Finland, that look on the surface they're completely different. Finland, they're not wearing uniform, they're calling the teacher by their first name, they're slouching around on bean bags, like in the corridors, it all feels quite informal. In Japan, very smart uniforms, blackboard across the wall, the kids bow when the teacher comes in. So on the surface, it looks completely different. But when you actually, when you observe it, you know, as a teacher, or if you're looking at the pedagogy, the commonalities are actually incredible across very different cultural contexts. These high-performing systems have a very similar approach to the pedagogy, broadly speaking. And obviously, this is something that I could speak about for a long time. I'm happy to chat later on. But I think there are things we can learn from other systems, but uniform, neither here nor there, really.
Can sense Lucy's disappointment there, because I know the panel were hoping to have a massive bust-up at some point during this, and they've all agreed so far. So does anyone have a question to provoke a bust-up, please?
Matt, you spoke a lot about qualifications versus the four purposes and how that fits into our new curriculum. I recently had a look at the new GCSEs and how they look in science, and I was thinking, do you think they actually reflect what Donaldson was hoping they would in terms of the four purposes, or do you think they're too closely similar to our current GCSEs and they're too focused on qualifications rather than actually exploring what the holistic individual and the four purposes that we can get out of our learners?
So interestingly, you have me at a slight disadvantage because I haven't read those yet. What we have done is we've done a lot of work with Qualifications Wales based on when they went out to consultation. They actually came to Baselag and we had conversations with them about particularly some of the decisions around science, about the movement into the double science award away from the separate sciences and those kind of things. What we didn't talk about necessarily with those was the specifications and the kind of the questions and the content and the specifications and how different or separate they might be to the current ones. On the journey with Qualifications Wales, when we were involved in the curriculum, we did have conversations with them, and there was one interesting moment where speakers from Qualifications Wales said that they had heard that in some schools people would teach the specification rather than teach their curriculum. And that struck me as really interesting, because in a lot of secondary schools, there isn't really a distinct distinction between a GCSE specification and a curriculum. So Qualifications Wales, when they came on board with that, they were really, really open to the idea of listening to teachers and listening to how they could try and make the four purposes, how they could make them more involved in subject level qualifications, and how they could try and make qualifications that tested more than just specification, if you like, and were more open. But like I say, I haven't seen the final documents yet, sorry, or rather the documents as they stand yet.
I'm going to be slightly controversial at this point. And that was very diplomatic, Matt, but I won't be quite so diplomatic. I think the qualification system is wrong, frankly. I just don't think it aligns currently with what the new curriculum wants us to create, to develop. And I don't think until we change radically qualifications at 16, the curriculum will fully embed, particularly at secondary, because of that backwash. You know, because we get to a point, don't we, in our education, we do Donaldson, we do the purposes, but at some point we come to the crunch and we go, right, we've got to do these GCSEs now. We've got to look at the outcomes, and schools invariably are judged still on their proportion of students achieving at various levels. So I think we need something more radical. I would go down the baccalaureate route, the French baccalaureate, that gives different routes in, an academic route, a professional route, a vocational route that is then tiered. It's like a grading system of really good to good. And it allows for the more holistic thing that you're talking about, not just looking at qualification in particular subject disciplines, but this more rounded, what have you learned? How have you developed? You know, what skills do you have? What characteristics have you developed? It looks more holistically at the learner. Look at, I would encourage you, those interested in this sort of thing, to look at Louise Hayward's review of qualifications in Scotland. And she's offered or proposed something similar, because she calls it a diploma, but she's looking at a three-tiered sort of leavers certificate at 16, which gives you a rundown of your more academic qualification. But then there's an element that is more reflective, where you as a learner talk about your learning journey and what you've achieved. And then there's a sort of project-based element as well. So as a whole, it to me speaks more to the more progressive, purpose-led, process-orientated curriculum that Scotland has and that we have in Wales. So yeah, you've identified another problem that if the minister was here today, I wish he could hear. And I suspect it will be developed in time, and I put my mortgage on it changing in the next decade or so.
With the three-tier model and moving away from exams, I would just express a note of caution, though, because while I completely agree with the four purposes as a goal of education, and I think we should be careful, I think it's more of an accountability issue in terms of, if you've got high stakes accountability attached to quite narrow GCSEs, then yes, that's what schools will focus on. But if you were to reduce the accountability or spread out the accountability so it is much more about hit the microphone. Assessing, you know, I'm very for things like extended project qualifications, where students, you know, are being assessed on a much kind of wider set of skills. But if you go down a route where you have three different levels you can enter at, and you do coursework towards it, and some students take exams and some students just do the more project-based stuff, what ends up happening, or at least did in the context of New Zealand that had exactly this, was you have a situation where it is the kids from poorer backgrounds who are not entered for the exams. They are entered for the project-based qualifications. And those project-based qualifications are not valued as highly. And, you know, this may well be based on how they are designed, but in New Zealand, not valued as highly by employers. You end up with a situation, again, in New Zealand, where in order to meet your, they're called NCEA in New Zealand, National Certificate for Educational Achievement, to get your NCEA Level 1, all you really have to do is, you know, there's certain standards, or quite vague statements of what you had to achieve in numeracy. And the students, I was in a school in a predominantly Maori population in that particular school, in that particular area, which in New Zealand, Maori population unfortunately correlates with poverty. And these kids were getting their NCEA qualification level one based on passing the numeracy standard. And the way that they were passing the numeracy standard was they were doing some science coursework that included doing some maths. But of course, because it was coursework, the teacher was showing them how to do the maths and then they were doing the maths. So they hadn't actually learnt the maths. They weren't independently doing that. And I'm not saying that this is what would happen in Wales, but I'm just saying that there are lots and lots of things that can go wrong from an equity perspective when you move to a situation where actually the teacher or the student or even the school get to choose which qualifications students are entered into and where some of those qualifications are either perceived to be or are actually less valued or valuable in terms of what students know are able to do, what's going to set them up for success in the future. So there's lots and lots of considerations.
Yeah. And thinking about that, I responded in from a relatively science-specific answer. But if we talk about what I was saying at the start, which is, you know, that potential tension that is there and that potential between driving for that, for those outcomes. And you're right, it is an accountability thing and sort of punitive accountability in relation to exam specifications does drive a really explicit focus on quite a closed model of sort of teaching and pedagogy. And, you know, there are indications that that's changing. When I've been through inspections in a school where the inspection was determined, the inspection outcome is determined by the outcomes of the previous cohort's GCSEs before anyone walks into the door. It's all determined already. And we've moved away from that now because the inspection framework isn't relating those kind of outcomes to school measures of success in the same sort of way, which strikes me as a really positive step forward to allow a curriculum to breathe a little bit and to encourage some of the kind of practices that I think you're perhaps hinting at in that tension. Also, what's interesting is I mentioned some of the work we were doing in the curriculum form with Qualifications Wales. They were very, very aware that there are a lot of things that are incredibly valuable in schools that cannot be measured via a qualification, like some of the things I talked about, for example, a pupil's well-being and their ability to look after themselves and make sensible decisions to take care of themselves. If you put an exam in that, it suddenly becomes totally meaningless. So they were very open to the things that there are things which schools should be celebrated for, equally as valuable as GCSE outcomes. The next step is there a mechanism ever that does recognise that equally, that recognises school success in terms of those outcomes which we can measure and put on paper and look at, and those ones that we can't but are equally important.
Okay, we're going to move to takeaway time for you now. We've got the panel to give you some answers to your questions. I'm going to pose them one final question, which I'm going to ask them to concisely sum up for you the answer to this. You're about to enter the profession. You're about to become a newly qualified teacher. At the moment, you get to come out to university, you get to mix and share and steal good ideas. You've got two different schools on the go during this year. You've got your subject leads, you've got your fellow student teachers. You're about to enter a job in an individual school, which is going to be much more like being in a bit of a bubble, quite isolated potentially, compared to what you've got now. And with a school that is locally interpreting a very, very vague curriculum framework, which doesn't have a whole lot of stuff to hang your hat on. So the question I'm asking the panel on your behalf is, as a new teacher who's now in the bubble in a specific context, how can I still ensure that I am the best teacher I can be? How do I know that I'm being the best teacher I can be when so much detail is not really there at the moment? Where should you be looking to make sure that you are still the best teacher you can be?
Go ahead.
Okay. So my answer on that one is to do with a piece of work that we did at school when we were in putting the curriculum in place. We had all of our teachers discuss, so historians, physicists, chemists, talk about what do they think a successful learner in their field looks like when they are leaving compulsory education. Brackets, you are not allowed to discuss grades. That's the conversation we had with them. And what they came up with became the goals of our local curriculum at Baselegg, and it's the descriptions of what a learner looks like, and they're very closely aligned, really, no matter what subject you look at. It's to do with pupil independence, their resilience, their well-being, their problem solving, all of those kind of things. So what I would really urge you to do is when you're at this point in your profession and you're going into the profession, is to ask yourself that question about what you think a learner should look like when you have taught them for 5 years in secondary education. What do you think they should look like, taking grades out of the picture? And that's what you need to be aiming for in your lessons. Make that your golden thread in all of your lessons, to be closing in on that vision of what you want that learner to be like. Because if you do that and ignore whatever, not ignore the policies in the school, but allow the policies in the school to take place, but don't let them deviate you away from that golden thread, you will find that your lessons are more exciting, they're more challenging, you build better relationships with learners, and you have a more fulfilling career as a result.
Relates to what I was saying in my 4 minutes at the beginning, but make sure you stay connected to other people and don't get too stuck in the one school environment. It can be all encompassing, especially when you're first teaching and it's all quite busy. Make sure you stay in touch with each other and compare notes and what's going on in your school. Join subject specialist networks within your local authority if they exist, and find out how your subject's being taught in other schools. Find your people. And don't take it to heart too much if what your school is doing in particular doesn't seem to kind of align with what you thought it would be or how you would want teaching to be. Ultimately, different schools in different parts of Wales are doing very, very different things because the curriculum is so high level. So ultimately, you know, find your people. And if it comes to it and you are finding it frustrating, you know, stay a couple of years and then don't think, oh, teaching's not for me. Think, I haven't found my people, I haven't found my school, because there will be a school out there that is just right for you. And I'm sure you'll have a fantastic time in the very first school you go to as well. But just remember that it's what one school does. It's like its own little world. And there are lots and lots of different ways of doing things across the country. Have fun. Good luck.
I think mine, Tom, would be about recognising that you are learners as well. And that education doesn't stand still. Your professional development doesn't stop when you leave the university in a couple of months' time. And I work, I've the real pleasure of working and honour of working with scores of schools across Wales on professional inquiry action research. I know that you're now conducting your own close to practice research in your schools. And it was asked of me fairly recently, by a student, why are we doing this? You know, why am I having to go through research methods and collect data and all this sort of stuff? Well, actually, you will be doing that once you start the job proper as well. And it's the curriculum for Wales is predicated on having a research engaged and active profession that makes sound pedagogical choices based on evidence. And that's it. So keep learning. Keep reading, keep researching, and as Lucy says, talk to people. You know, education is a social science. It's all about social interaction. It's all about relationships. So speak to those in your school, speak to those in your cluster, and if you are fortunate enough to go out into the big world and go to PL events or workshops and what have you, speak to people there as well, because you'll always learn from other people. So yeah, professional dialogue, I think, is the buzz phrase at the moment.
And that's about all we've got time for in this session. Thank you for the excellent questions, which were absolutely brilliant. Thank you to Dr. Viv for her expert handling the mic on a long wire. But most importantly, thank you to our three panellists, Gareth, Lucy and Matt.
So there we go. That was a fun day on the PGCE programme and loads of really interesting things that came out of that panel discussion. Well done to the student teachers as well, who asked some really interesting questions. And what were your takeaways from that then, Emma? You weren't there, but you've heard it now.
Yeah, there's a lot to dig into there. But I think what I might bring us back to are those 5 minute or so presentations that we asked each of the panel members to present to sort of kick off that whole discussion. I felt that there was a sort of unifying thread to those three presentations. And the thing that stood out to me the most was about this idea of working hard to understand and act upon the things that you can influence and control as a newly qualified teacher. I think, I can't remember which one said, it might have been Gareth, who said there's sort of a lot of noise out there that obviously does have a bearing on what happens in schools, but in terms of how it affects you in the classroom, you know, it's about sort of shutting out the noise. And the things that they all seem to be talking about that are within your control are the things that probably I would say NQTs are going to be caring about the most. Firstly, how you behave. You have, as Lucy said, and Gareth, that the agency and control over how you roll and how you behave in your own classroom, how you behave in addressing your own professional learning needs, that you can sort of take control over that professional learning. And Lucy even says to go further and, you know, continuously be sort of critical of that professional learning that you're engaging with. And don't underestimate your own ability to ask really important questions within your place of work, within your department. You know, don't assume that you are the person that needs to sort of sit in the corner quietly, receiving all of the information unquestioned. You know, it's really important that you bring your perspective to the table professionally, I guess.
I was interested in the whole shock troops thing, actually. I mean, Gareth said I liked it. He used it in the first session, just, you know, that was recording of a second run through that panel discussion. And he'd mentioned this Donaldson quote about shock troops. Not quite sure I liked it. I think it was just a little bit sort of, ooh, that could backfire if anyone takes that too literally, you know.
Yeah, I prefer the angle that, you know, that Lucy was encouraging, endorsing, you know, that you've got an important role to play in thinking critically and asking the questions that you need to know the answers to in order to do what Gareth said, which is to sort of take control of the learning and teaching experiences that you are in control of in your own classrooms. You know, if that's about disciplinary knowledge, concepts and progression, or if that's about assessment for learning practices and how you, as Matt talked about, take a more rounded view of how your learners are progressing. I think that was another big thing that came out of this, was about, you know, you have the control, you have the influence and the control over what you get to know about that will help you to become a better teacher. Getting to know key people to collaborate with in school, as Lucy said a little bit later on, I think it was in the question and answer session, about, you know, find your people. Find the people who are, you know, not going to sort of give you carte blanche to do what you like, but who are going to make you think, who are going to help you to develop. And that might be in your school, in your cluster. It might be online, as Lucy says. It might be looking to subject associations. You know, that those people are out there, but, you know, find your people. And I think that was a really important message, actually, for retention in the teaching profession, because, you know, all too often we hear stories of teachers leaving the profession just lately because of that, this sort of dissatisfaction and inability to sort of cope with workload, etc. I strongly believe that if you've found your people and you've got a really good support network around you, that can mitigate against the risk of sort of taking the plunge and leaving. Certainly in some of my darkest days in teaching in ITE, I turn to Tom, we have a good chat about it, and I find the sort of resolve to go forward, which sounds a little bit touchy-feely, but I think it really is important to take some time to build that network of collaborators who are going to be your people and help you to move forward and find enjoyment from this wonderful career.
Yeah, I would agree. And yes, we are the least touchy-feely people ever, but we definitely do look after each other, I think, don't we? You need to find your people. Good. We've pulled some something interesting and something to tries out of the personnel from the panel discussion. Something interesting, yes, we've recommended them before, but since they were together in our panel, if you have not read Lucy Crean's book, Cleverlands, it is worth a read. We reviewed the final chapter of it in a podcast many moons ago, didn't we? And the fact that we were able to get a whole episode just out of a single chapter of it tells you how much there is that's in there that's good to read. And we have also frequently mentioned Gareth's blog, Welsh Education Matters, but he, I think, strikes a really good balance between being critical, and we sometimes don't have enough criticality around the education reforms, but without going so far down the road that he's just kind of flailing around shouting that we're all doomed. You know, he's critical with proposed solutions, and he's got quite a spicy writing style. So I think those two things are well worth a read and something to try.
Yeah, and something to try comes from Matt Maughan. And I think that point that he makes about the sort of information you might give to your head of department or whoever comes calling and asks the inevitable question, tell me about how little Johnny is progressing in your subject. You know, what kind of information would you be able to share about someone that you've been teaching, perhaps on your PGC programme, perhaps you've been teaching a class that you inherited this year? What kind of information would you be able to provide that moves beyond a sort of summative, very performative, very accountability culture related sort of set of data points? What would you be able to tell them that indicates that you really know how that young person is progressing as a person in your subject and more generally? And I think the point that he makes about those harder to measure aspects of, you know, what we're trying to achieve with our young people, like their levels of resilience, I think you can give a lot of really important qualitative information about, actually. So take that little task for a walk, talk about a particular pupil, what you know about them and how you know they're progressing and in what ways.
And I think we can say that all we like, but it was really refreshing to hear that from a senior leader in a school that is considered a high achieving school, you know, that he does not want numbers in boxes. He wants something a bit more rich and nuanced. I think that was really refreshing and encouraging to hear, wasn't it?
It really was. And the fact that he wants to know, you know, there is RAG rating. Are they overperforming? Are they exceeding? I can't remember the exact words he used. But it was up to the individual subject disciplines to determine, you know, what that actually meant in their subject disciplines. It wasn't about trying to make that subject discipline fit. I remember trying to make the school's central, it was Key Stage 3 then, assessment outcomes sort of fit what we were trying to achieve in drama. It was trying to fit a round peg into a square hole. And so, as you say, very refreshing to hear that he believes in the expertise of his colleagues, and he understands that on a disciplinary level, progression is going to look very different in different subjects.
Always love that quote. Do we assess what we value? Do we value what we assess?
Indeed.
It's an old chestnut, but a good one. And that is us at the end of season 6.
It is. Oh my gosh. Pop the champagne cork.
I think we're saving that for 100,000th listen, aren't we? When we appear on the video version of a podcast, looking a bit sorry for ourselves and with empty bottles in the background, you'll know we've hit the magic.
Absolutely.
We'll be back next year with some more goodies. We'll be back in the summer with our usual bonus episode. But thanks for sticking with us for the roller coaster ride that has been our 6th season. We will be back in September with yet more goodies. We're already planning all the world domination we're going to do in season 7. But for now, that is it from us, and have a lovely summer.
Goodbye.
You've been listening to Emma and Tom Talk Teaching, a podcast about all things education presented by Emma O'Doher and Tom Breeze. Our panellists in this episode were the international education consultant and author, Lucy Crehan, Dr. Gareth Evans, Director of Education Policy at the University of Wales Trinity St. David Carmarthen, and Matthew Maughan, Deputy Head at Basleck School in Newport. As we reach the end of another year of podcasting, huge thanks to everyone else who appeared this year. Gareth Rain, Dr. Elizabeth McGregor, Sian Sawa, Lisa Taylor, Dr. Kath Jones, Dr. Kevin Smith, Amy Healy, Heather Hughes, Cameron Stewart, Lucy Donovan, Sian Watkins, Paul Keynes, Maris Lyons, Sarah Kaysen, Seanad Davith, Kerry Bevan, Dr. Anne Hodgson, Carl Jones, Chloe Griffiths, Serena Hancock, Tiana Hancock, April Pinch, Dr. Emily McLeod, Dean Pimble, Mark Lewis, Mark Williams, Lisa Fenn, and Dr. Lisa Reed. Podcast artwork is by Beth Blandford, and the music is by Cameron Stewart. Technical support by Rhys Evans, Jamie Hicks, Peter Lambin, Caitlin Meredith, and Ethan Walsh. The studio manager for Cardiff Met Sport Broadcast and Media is Adrian Rapps. Thanks for listening. We'll be back in September with Season 7. In the meantime, take care and enjoy teaching.